It's not like any other podcast, coming to you straight from the heartland, where investing is told like it is. It's time for Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. Hold on, because here comes the next episode of the Paranoid Banker Podcast.
Hey there, everybody. Darren Garman here, and wanted to welcome you to this week's podcast. I am excited to be sharing some information with you that I admittedly really had nothing to do with in putting together. What I mean is one of our investment partners, Lee Miltier, who is a renowned author, speaker, and business consultant, also happens to be one of our investment partners here, recently interviewed a guy that I think you should know more about. And the guy's name is Matt Fury. And Matt is known worldwide in terms of being not only a fitness expert, but also very much an expert in what's called combat conditioning. And he's considered one of the top experts in the world of psycho-cybernetics. And for some of you that are my age or older, you'll know what that really refers to, the works and the information from a guy named Maxwell Maltz, who is has been gone now from us for a while. Matt is a expert in terms of applying a lot of what Mr. Maltz's principles are in order to, bottom line, lead a happy and productive life. And so I really liked this interview. I thought it had a lot to do with us as investors in a lot of ways, in being a successful investor, a profitable investor, of course, and also being productive. And I thought the real cool thing about this interview, too, was the fact that it applies to a lot of other areas of life. And so you listen to me and read my emails and look into what I'm up to many times because you're interested in real estate or investing or something to do with that. Well, I think the information you're going to get out of this week's podcast is going to go beyond that and not only benefit you in all those ways, but in other ways more personal to you. And so, look, I look forward to you listening into this podcast and this interview that Lee has had with Matt, and think it will be a pretty good foundation for you to get through 2018 as successful, productive, and at the end of the day, profitable as possible. So let's go ahead and let's listen into Lee's interview with Matt. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. This is Lee Miltier. Our topic this month is going to be self-image for entrepreneurs. I'm excited today to share with you that our guest this month is the famous Matt Fury. Matt is a well-known author. He's a speaker. He's an information entrepreneur. He's also a world-class athlete. He was the first American to ever win the Feng Shu title in China. He beat the Chinese at his own game. He's been featured on the cover of many martial arts magazines. He's written articles that have drawn readers from over 80 countries around the world. He actually earns over $1 million a year in his niche market out of his spare bedroom in his large, impressive home in Florida. You can find out about him at his website, which is mattfury.com. I'm actually very proud to say that I've known Matt for about 4 years now. He and I have spoken at events around the United States, and we've had lots of conversations about the power of the self-image. We are definitely both lifetime students of the psycho-cybernetics materials by Dr. Maxwell Maltz. As a matter of fact, Matt was so impressed by the psycho-cybernetics materials that he actually bought all the rights to them. And I call that putting your money where your mouth is. I've asked him to spend an hour with us so he can share with us some of the secrets of not only being a world-class athlete, but also how he has become so successful in his niche. Welcome to our call, Matt. Are you there?
I'm here, Lee. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Again, I just want to share with everybody, Matt is the real thing. I mean, he walks his talk. First, if you would be kind enough to give us a short version, because I know the version is very long, of how you became such a champion athlete and how you used your self-image knowledge to help you do that.
Well, boy, that goes way back, but I'll give you the short version. I started in sports when I was 8. First started in swimming and and in wrestling. And I became a champion swimmer 3 years after I started, at age 10. And then my first 2 years were pretty dismal. I got beat by most everybody. And as a wrestler, I had some success early on, but it was it was real limited and all that. So I really got my bearings first as a swimmer. And when I was 11, after I got out of the 10 and under division, I had a guy on the team who was wanted to beat me, and so he started going to practice unbeknownst to me twice a day. And he started to catch up and get closer and closer to beating me. So I thought, well, if he's going twice a day, I'll go twice a day. So I started doing that. And I improved and got better and became, you know, really unbeatable in my area in swimming in three different strokes. When I got into wrestling at the junior high and college and high school level, I was really awful. And unlike swimming, I just didn't, even though I had some early success when I was 8, I just really didn't have the talent. And most people beat me, and I realized that I had to model what I did as a swimmer to become good. And that was go to practice twice a day, think about it, and increase my desire and see myself as a winner. When I got up on the starting blocks in a swimming event, swimming meet, I mean, I knew I was going to win. I could see it, and so much so that there was a joke in my hometown that the ladies that were writing the names and on the ribbons and medals had already filled mine out before the race started.
That's great.
You know, that, I mean, that's how confident I was in that. But in wrestling, it was the exact opposite. I lacked confidence. I lacked skill. And so I in high school, started to figure some things out. I didn't really know what I was doing. I hadn't read anything on it. And I just worked hard, and before practice, when I would walk to the recreation center to work out, I would talk to myself out loud, and I would pretend that I was giving a speech to my high school class. And after having come back from the state championship, and I'd be envisioning this and imagining this and talking out loud to myself. Nobody was around me, so they didn't lock me up. Lo and behold, 4 years later, I got to the state championships in wrestling, and I beat the defending champion in the quarterfinals. In the semifinals, I beat the number 3 ranked guy. And then in the finals, I lost by a point. So it was heartbreaking. But the interesting part of the story is that when I got back to school the following Monday, they had a pep assembly for just me, not for the entire team. I didn't know this was going to happen. And before I left for school that morning, my dad and mom were telling me, you ought to make a list of people you should thank for all the help they've given you throughout the years and how they've supported you. And so I was sitting in the study hall during the morning of that day, and I started writing a speech. It was like 3 pages, and I thank this person, and I thank that person who helped me. And then I threw in a few motivational sound bites of what had helped me in my career and how, even though I feel badly about losing in the finals, that the person who gets up after every knockdown can never be defeated. And I got to the high school auditorium at 2:30 that afternoon, and my parents are sitting in the front row. I'm thinking, what are they doing here? Then I realize what's going on, that this is for me, and the superintendent calls me up to the front and re-presents me with my awards and such that I'd won the weekend, over the weekend. And then he asked me if I'd like to give a speech. I said, well, yeah, sure. So I pulled this paper that I had folded up and put into my pocket that I had written in the morning, And I just read what I had written. And I
Your
got
first
like
speech.
Yeah, and I got like 3 standing ovations for this thing, and they just went crazy. And I didn't think about that moment till years later, studying psycho-cybernetics and all the other things that you and I have read, that I was programming my mind for that pep assembly to happen when I was walking to work out. I just didn't know I was.
Right.
I just didn't realize it. And that sort of thing when you program your self-image and when you visualize and all that, there shouldn't be effort involved. And there never was with that. That was just playing around. But there was a desire there, and it happened. And so I talk about that sometimes, and then all the other things. When I got into college, it was like a repeat of high school. I got beat up quite a bit early on, because I was on the University of Iowa team with Dan Gable, and most of the guys on the team had won the state title, you know, 2, 3, even 4 times. I was coming in there having lost in the finals by a point, but one of my goals in high school was to wrestle for Gable. And when I was there my freshman year, one of the coaches, he used to bring in a hypnotist to teach us how to program our minds. And
I was pretty progressive at the time.
Yeah, 1981.
Wow.
1981. And so that really got me interested. I found a lot of what I was learning from the hypnotist, it just didn't work for me, but I was intrigued by it. And so I'd read all these books. I'd go to the, instead of reading my college textbooks, I'd go read like The Magic of Believing and things like that.
And by the way, anybody who hasn't read that book by Claude Bristol?
Yeah.
I mean, as a matter of fact, Matt, that's one of the things that bound us.
Yeah.
We were at an internet seminar when I met you.
Yeah.
And you said on stage, The Magic of Believing, and I came up to you afterwards and said how much I love that book, and you said to me, well, apparently you're the only person in the room who's read it.
Yeah, well, you know, you probably were, because most people don't read, but it's a tremendous book. But I remember then I started to really improve during my 3rd year in college after reading that book. And I wrote down on a 3x5 card what my goal was, and I'd have it tucked inside of my wallet, and I'd have another one on my nightstand, and I'd have another one inside a book as a bookmark. And I just started doing all these different type of things, and then ended up becoming a national champion. Then when I got out of college, I started my own business as a personal fitness trainer about 2 months after I graduated. And I had no idea what I was doing. I had no clue, but it was what I wanted to do. And one of my first clients was a guy named Jack Gowan. And he said to me, we'd start talking about all this mental stuff and setting goals and that. He said to me, have you ever read Psycho-Cybernetics? I said, no, I never have. He said, oh, my God, you got to read that. He goes, that's like the Bible. That's like the most important. And so I immediately, as soon as the workout with him was finished, drove down to the bookstore and bought that. And it was an amazing coincidence, because in that book, much of what was written mirrored exactly where I was in my business. I only had 2 clients. Most of the day I'm sitting there waiting for a customer. The same things Dr. Maltz talked about, how, you know, first week goes by, not a phone call. Second week, not a phone call. And just, I had, what I did to convince myself that I could succeed in this is I would just say to myself, if I can become a national champion, then I can open a business and make it succeed. Now, there were two totally different skills. One was physical, the other was marketing, salesmanship, et cetera, et cetera. But because I instilled that belief in myself, I made it. And I've done that in basically every other thing that I've set out to do, that same sort of thing. It's like, man, if I can win a national title, if I can win a world title, well, then I can write a best-selling book. And if I can write a best-selling book, I can become a millionaire. And if I can become a millionaire, I can be – and you just build on your successes. So that's really, in a nutshell, the story.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about psycho-cybernetics so much, but I'm going to guess there's a few people or a few members that we have that are, you know, maybe have heard of the book but have not read it. And just for those who don't know, Dr. Maxwell Maltz was a plastic surgeon, and what he found out is that he could operate on people, and oftentimes when they looked in the mirror, they saw themselves look exactly as they had prior to the operation, and that is because we don't see with our eyes, we actually see with our brain, and that whatever we program in our brain is what we actually see. Mm-hmm. And so why Matt and I are so fascinated about it is because both of us, you know, have, you know, you've heard Matt's story and you've heard my story before, but, you know, both of us have become behind the eight ball to the forefront of our careers because we understand the process of programming the mind and the whole importance of the psycho-cybernetics. Your self-image is the core of your being. It determines everything about you. So, Matt, I guess one of the first questions I had for you was, you know, you talk a great deal about how you don't have to put effort into things.
Mm-hmm.
So share with our folks, you know, the whole secret of self-image and why you don't have to put effort into things.
Well, the best way I ever heard it described was by Brian Tracy in a tape series of his. He said, in all mental work, effort defeats itself. And I thought, huh. That's why when I'm trying to pound these affirmations into my head, they don't work.
Right.
The opposite starts happening. Oh, that's why when I tried to use my will and my visualization and enforce it and all that, it didn't work. All the times that it worked was when I go into the theater of the mind or the arena of the mind or the beach of the mind, wherever you want to go, and I would picture what it is I wanted, and I would add a lot of feeling and emotion to it, but I didn't add, like, muscle power to it. I didn't try to strive with like, my muscles of my body to make something happen. In fact, you've got to relax your body.
Right.
You got to relax your mind, and in this relaxed state, amplify the vibration. So there's a trick to it, and it's kind of like if you sit in a chair, and you know, like a massage chair that vibrates. Well, the leather on the chair doesn't coil up and stiffen up, and it's very pliable and relaxed. But the vibration is coming from inside of the chair, and that's the same way with your mind and body, is that you on the outside are very calm and very relaxed. Your mind is also that way. But then you put the effort into the visualization by imagining, if I were to dial up the vibration, we got this dial that goes from 1 to 7. Okay, where am I now? Oh, I'm at about a 3. Okay, could you dial it up to a 4? Can you just do this in your mind? All right, can you dial it up to a 5? All of a sudden, you start internally vibrating and shaking at another level, but you're not trying to do it with your muscles, and you're not doing it with struggle. It's just theater of the mind. It's like you go to a movie, and there's a scene that makes you laugh or a scene that makes you cry. You're not putting any effort into either of those. They're just happening as a result of what you're watching. And that's the same way with the self-image visualization.
You know, I know there's a couple of people out there, God bless you, who don't understand what the word vibration means. So let's go there.
Okay. Well, everything in the world vibrates.
Right. Everything
we just
is made
don't,
of electrical energy.
Everything. You know, you take a light bulb. It has to have, I think, about 38,000 vibrations per second for there to be light comes from that. Now we start moving up a little further. Everything is shaking. Everything is vibrating. Even though we look at it and think of it as a solid object, it's not. Well, scientists have determined that the highest vibrational frequency there is a human thought, that nothing vibrates faster than that. So it's pretty interesting. You think about the computer you got in front of you. I mean, that's vibrating really fast. In fact, if you've even seen the old, now things are a little different, but I remember taking video of myself on a computer before, and you wouldn't even see what you were looking at on the computer. You would just see all this vibration going up and down. And the same sort of thing. Everything is magnetic. That's why we have refrigerators that close and stay closed. There's a magnetic strip on it to help it do that. An MRI is a magnetic resonance imaging of the body. Everything has a magnetic field and or a vibrational field. But your thought has the most powerful of them all. And so when you think about this, can your thoughts actually be work or be doing work for you? And all I can tell you is when you start playing around with this, and that's really the right word to use, is not work.
Right.
When you start playing around with all these sort of ideas, a strange number of coincidences automatically line up for that moment. Like, for example, I was talking to this client here in Reading, Pennsylvania, that I'm doing some work with. I said to him last night, I said, isn't it interesting that every time that I visualize a certain thing that I really like to see happen and put a lot of feeling and emotion into it, all these other things in the universe just line up in the path and start coming to me, but they're all coincidental. It's coincidental that I received the check for $15,000 in the mail. It's coincidental that somebody called and on that day, or that somebody did an email for me and it brought in X number of dollars. Oh, all those things were just going to happen anyway.
But see, you know, the reason I wanted to interview you, Matt,
yeah,
is because you talk about these things. It's very matter of fact. I mean, it's, mm-hmm, you know, it's very clear because all of our conversations. But there's so many people in life, as you well know, who don't get it,
uh-huh,
that their thoughts are real, mm-hmm, and that their thoughts are more powerful than their physical behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in creating their reality. I mean, we have to take action, but that we do create our reality with our thoughts. You know.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, I travel a lot, as you do, and
mm-hmm,
I normally have a very easy time of it because I think ahead, you know, I imagine ahead that everything's going to go fine and whatever little problems there are, you know, I will be taken care of.
Yeah.
So I don't have horror stories with traveling, and yet we have mutual friends
yeah,
who every time they talk, all they do is talk about the horror stories of traveling, and so they attract it to themselves.
I believe there's a lot of truth to that, and not only that, but a couple years ago we talked about, and I'll give you an update on this from just recent travels, but in the past, the first time I traveled to China, we have a vacation home there, my wife's from there, so we go back there a couple times a year, but the first time I went to China in 1993, everybody was telling, oh, my God, the traveling there is just awful, and, oh, it's so long, and all of this. And I said to myself, well, if I made the decision to go there, then I can make the decision as to whether or not I'm going to enjoy the travel there.
Exactly.
You see, or I can piss and moan and complain and say, oh, it's going to be awful, it's going to be terrible, oh, they're everybody's rude to me, and so on.
Everybody's favorite thing to do, right?
Right. That's what everybody loves to do. Yeah, is complain. So anyway.
And by the way, nobody cares.
And no one cares, right. And so now, over the years, the traveling to and from China, I would have, I'd sleep half the time and half the time I wouldn't sleep. But most of the time, probably a 13-hour trip, I'd sleep 7 hours. Well, now I've gotten, but then there would be jet lag in the early years for a couple days. Now there's zero jet lag. Now the interesting thing about this is I don't even sleep on the way there. I might get 1 hour of sleep. I simply sit in my chair, ride business class or first class. I don't like riding like cattle. And so I fly in comfort. I put the chair back and I read or I listen to things, or a good majority of the time I'm just staring off into outer space, eyes open, just totally relaxed and thinking. Now our plane usually gets into Shanghai around 7 at night. And then after you've gone through customs and baggage claim and all that, it's probably 8:30. Then by the time we get to the hotel, it's 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I get to the hotel, take a shower, get cleaned up, go get something to eat, go take a sauna, get a massage, go to bed at 1 o'clock or so, wake up the next morning at 8, have breakfast, and just morph right into that day and right into that time zone. Now, on the way back, it's exactly the same. So whatever time I get in, if I got in at 11 at night or 7 at night, doesn't matter. I immediately am in that time zone doing whatever people in that time zone are doing, and there's zero fatigue. So I came back from China in January on the 17th. I had to do a mastermind meeting on the 19th. On the 15th, I had to do a mastermind meeting on the 17th and 18th and a seminar on the 19th, 20th, and 21st. And people were saying, this guy isn't even back yet. How is he going to be able to do this? This is crazy. He's going to be jet lagged. He's going to be tired. That's their thinking. I got back. I told people I could have started the meeting the next day.
Okay, well, I love this because this is really real life information. So let's just break this down for everybody listening today. Matt isn't able to do this just out of magic. Mm-hmm. Matt does this because he has a clear intention of doing this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I mean, briefly just share with them the process that you use to come to that clear intention.
The process.
Now, you've done it so long, it's like a natural thing for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of your repertoire.
I have to think here for this, because this isn't the same for me as just like setting a financial goal. Or basically, I look at there's two different ways to approach what I'm going to do. There's at least two, but we'll narrow it down to two just to simplify things. One is to go the negative route and complain and talk badly about the whole experience that I've chosen to go through.
Right. And that you participated.
Yeah. I've chosen to fly somewhere. So I can either choose to feel badly about what I've got to do to make to get where I need to go, or I can say, you know, I like flying. I love flying. And I'm going to enjoy my trip. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to get some stuff done. And nobody is going to make me feel bad, and nobody is going to do anything to upset me. It's going to be great. So I choose the better of the two images. And for the flying, I just keep my body relaxed. I just sit there and I do the things I want to do. And if I have any worrisome thought or any fearful thought or anything come up, I'll say, well, wait a minute here. You made a choice here that you're going to enjoy this, that you're going to like this trip. Now let's stick with that. And that's really all I do. Some people, they fear flying, and I had that one time in my life, and what I told people to do is expand your body, make it as big as the plane. So when you feel this turbulence, it isn't turbulence, it's the wind, all right? the wind is okay. When you're driving in your car through on the highway and the wind is blowing your car a little back and forth, you don't call it turbulence.
You just, good, I like that.
Right? You just call it wind.
Yes.
And you don't worry about it.
Right.
It's the same in the plane.
Nobody's freaking out about the wind in the car. Exactly.
So it's the same thing. And so that's really what I do. And it doesn't mean I don't have to monitor myself, because sometimes if the plane drops 1,000 feet in a second, you hit a patch. I mean, it can jolt you, because my body's really awake. I'm very sensitive to anything goes on in there. And I just remind myself, stay relaxed, expand your body, make it as big as the plane, feel the wind, and just instead of fighting the wind with my body, I'm not going to win. We're 38,000 feet in the air. I said, go with this thing, just relax and let it move you around. And then I'm okay.
Well, and to, you know, to make this a compliment to you, I mean, what you're doing really is you're deciding what you focus in on.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in control because you've decided to focus in on, I'm in power, I've chosen to be here, so mm-hmm. I'm going to not only make the best of it, but I'm going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not a victim, where most people go through their life as a victim to life,
yeah.
Like the turbulence is happening to them.
Yes.
Versus, I'm just part of this, and there
yeah.
is turbulence.
And I'll get in harmony with it.
Exactly.
And the other thing I do on the flights there is I start imagining, one of the funny things I do is I have this vision of the smiling universe. And everything is out for your good. Everything wants you to succeed.
Yes.
Everything wants you to have a good time and be happy and so on and so forth. Now, before I came up with this one, I hated Shanghai. Absolutely hated it. It's a big city. It's dirty. The people are rude. They're this, they're that. And I swore to my wife, the first time I went there in 1998, I said to her, I will never come back here. And I wrote an article that appeared in the daily, the Sunday newspaper in the travel section in California. First page had that in writing. I will never come back. I'll go to China again and again, but never to Shanghai. And about 5 years later, I'm on a flight and my wife, you know, booked the tickets. Instead of going through Beijing, we're going to Shanghai. So I started in on this thing and I said, you know, how about everybody in Shanghai likes me? How about everybody smiling and taking care of me and they're all glad to see me and they're not rude and all of this? I just focused on this and it was astounding to me what a different city it was that I was in. It was no longer this big dirty city with all these ugly people who were rude.
Right.
I mean, they're there, but I wasn't having to deal with them.
Well, also because your thoughts had changed. I mean, since thoughts are real and mm-hmm. because you are now looking for the good, you
yes.
found the good?
Yes. I absolutely, I mean, the evidence supports it. Then we had another one of, our home is in Haikou on Hainan Island, and the waitresses, they, a lot of them don't speak Mandarin. And so when I would speak to them, they wouldn't know what I was saying. And it disturbed me because I'd start thinking, well, maybe my Chinese isn't so good after all. But then we'd go to other areas of China and everyone understood me very easily and clearly. So I decided before the last trip, I said, you know, if they don't understand me, that has nothing to do with me. It has to do with them. And so this was the, again, I'm making a, just a simple choice on this, is that whether they understand me or not, it's not going to ruin my meal. I'm still going to have a good meal. I'm not going to get upset about it. And so the last time I was there for a month, not one unpleasant meal because a waitress didn't understand what I was trying to say. So again, and there's just different levels of this, and sometimes you start thinking, well, how far can I take this? as far as you want. So,
Well, you know, I'm happy to hear you say this because, you know, the whole point for business owners and entrepreneurs, and, you know, a lot of people get caught in past programming or mm-hmm. past beliefs about themselves, and they make opinions about themselves that are negative, and then they just reinforce them over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'm not good at something or another.
Yeah.
And they brag about I'm not good at it, not
yeah.
realizing they're programming themselves to always be bad at it and to suffer stress.
Yeah.
Because they program themselves that. Matt, you're such a shining example of, you know, someone, you know, down to earth, who is, you know, talking about what some people call very woo-woo-y stuff,
uh-huh.
which really isn't woo-woo-y at all.
No,
I mean, it's simple. It's proven information by scientists, physics. I mean, if you read Psycho-Cybernetics, if you read The Magic of Believing, I mean, it's out there. It's just that our general society has this, if we don't see it, we don't believe it.
Well, let me give you an example, Lee, and this will be personal to you. I haven't done an interview like this in 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. I made a decision 2 years ago, no more teleseminars, no more interviews. I'm tired of this. I don't want to do it anymore. Well, and I'm not speaking unless it's in my home where I live. They got to come to me. I'm not going to them.
We learned that from Dan Kennedy.
Yeah, I learned that from Dan. The teleseminar thing I just came up with on my own. I got tired of it.
Right.
Because most of the people ask just stupid questions. The interview, I don't like it. I don't like it. All the victim stuff, right?
Right.
So anyway.
I'm hearing that, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, here's the funny thing. I'm in China in January, and I said, well, this year I'm gonna open up a little bit, and I'm gonna let some people come to me who want me to speak at their events, and I'm going to choose one, and I'll do one, maybe two teleseminars. And so guess what? In January, I'm there, maybe 2 days after I put this thought out, I get an email, and it's an invitation to speak at his the summit, the Kennedy Info Summit in November in Atlanta. I said, well, this is pretty good for the first thing that came my way. I'll take it.
Right. I would think that's very good.
You know, forget all the other ones that are offered. Then you then sent an email to me asking me about this. I said, huh, okay, yeah, I'll definitely do this one. But everybody else has been no. So it's funny to me that the two best possibilities that could have emerged did so immediately. I said yes, and that's a done deal. But about last year, after about a year of telling everybody no, everybody stopped asking. And nobody asked me to speak at their seminars or or be on the teleseminar with them or be interviewed. Everybody stopped asking. Again, this shows you that I didn't do anything.
This is a fascinating story because I meditate and I think. And
yeah.
Since I only do 12 interviews a year for my program, mm-hmm. you know, I'm very selective of who I ask. And so I had I spent an afternoon thinking about who would I like to seek out for, you know, the Millionaire Program. And literally your face popped up in front of me. And I remember saying to myself, you know, I literally said, oh, Matt, he's not going to do this.
Oh, yeah. That's what people have been basically conditioned is that, well, you could ask him, but you're basically wasting your time.
Exactly. And I said, you know, I remember talking to Matt a couple of years ago where he telling me how tired he was of doing these and, you know, some of the nutcase people out there. But still, your face popped up, and I actually then saw a picture of myself on the phone with you.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, well, the worst thing that can happen is I write him an email, and I ask him, and he says no. That's the worst thing that can happen.
Right.
And then when I got the email from you that you said, oh, I would love to do it, I was like, is this for Matt? This is to school.
Well, and the key thing is that you hit there is you've got nothing to lose by trying.
Exactly.
And most people won't try.
Well,
you know, they'll think, oh, that doesn't work, or that'll work for them but not for me, or something. But if you just give it a try for 28 days, and like you teach, and like I teach, and just start working on these things, you become a believer real fast. I had a guy in my coaching, and he's a psychology major, and in college got his master's degree and all that, and he didn't do any of this. He doesn't believe any of it. And I said to him, read Psycho-Cybernetics and Thinking Grow Rich for the rest of your life, over and over again. Well, he started doing this, and he's telling me how his sales are going up and up. His emails have gotten better and all of this. And I said that guys like Dr. Maxwell Maltz and Napoleon Hill, they develop in what in Hindu philosophy, there's different words for this, and Eastern philosophy, I should say, maybe more accurate. One of them is the fancy word for transmission, and they call it Vak Shakti. And so when you get somebody really vibrating at a high level and you read their words or listen to their words, you can literally be feeling like you're getting electrocuted when somebody's good and they've developed that transmission quality. I know this from reading these things myself, that they affect you and they affect your mind, and they affect every cell of your body. Somebody who shakes your hand from one day to the next will know the difference. It's like if you start reading Psycho-Cybernetics and you start thinking about your definite major purpose and what's your goal for today and what's your top 10 goals for the year, and you start thinking about those, you will be energized at a higher level, and anybody just from an ordinary handshake will feel that you are different than the average person. And they won't know why. They won't know why. But when somebody is goal-oriented and directed, they vibrate at a higher level.
Now, you just said something that really made me stop for a second, is the fact that, you know, set your major purpose and 10 major goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of us as teachers understand the fact that most people really don't set goals.
Mm-hmm.
They react to life instead of being an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I know you, you've been kind enough to send us an article we're going to send out to our folks about the importance of daily goals and
mm-hmm.
Goals, you know, that you use to, you know, make your life different. Share with us some of the things that our folks could do to get more clarity, you know, to achieve those goals.
Well, real simple with the daily goal. I started with this back in college, is that I would have a guy in wrestling practice that would be a tough opponent to work out with, and we always kind of keep track in our head of who got more throws on the other guy or who pinned the other guy the most times. And I'd be like, well, this guy, last time we wrestled, he had two and I had two. It was pretty evenly matched. So, again, using that whole idea of the 3x5 card, I'd write on a card 25 throws that day. That's my goal for today's practice. I put it in my pocket. I think about it. I go to practice. Take the same guy that I struggled with, that he had two and I had two, and I would just clean his clock. I'd just wipe him out. And I said, my goodness, just because I did that? Yeah, just because you did that. I use the same thing when I go bowling in China. I never bowl. I haven't bowled since high school and a couple times after that. And my highest ever in high school was like 141 or something. We're in China, and I decided after the first day we're out there, I said, I need a goal for this. So before I leave the country, I'm going to bowl 180. I mean, it was 40 points more than I'd ever done, and I never practice, and I never train, and I don't even know how to do it very well. All I know is they have these arrows on the floor.
Go in that direction.
And they're going in that direction. And if I kind of figure, if I look at that arrow and I make sure the ball goes right down that arrow, it'll probably hit the ball I want it to hit. So before I go up there, if I have a full set of pins, I'd visualize all of them being knocked down before I throw the ball. All of a sudden, we get into about a couple days go by, and I haven't hit 180 or even close. The very last day before I leave the country, on the third game we're bowling, first ball up, strike. Second ball up, strike. Third one, I mean, I was just drilling them. And I ended up doing 181 on this. So this is an example where I used, and then I pulled it. I pulled the sheet of paper out of my card where I'd written how many I would do. So in sales, it works the same way. And in your business, it works the same way. And I remember back in 1999, and this is probably funny for people who have any inkling of an idea of how much money I make a day now, but I set a goal to make $400 a day.
That is actually funny.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah, now you really get the laugh, right? $400 a day in sales of my products.
Right.
That would constitute $12,000 a month in sales, or $144,000 a year. I started doing that, and pretty soon, $400 a day was just automatic. So I said, okay, let's make it $800 a day. All of a sudden, I start making $800 a day. I remember my wife saying to me, do you ever think there will be a time where we'll make like a couple thousand dollars a day? I'd say, yeah. And then it would happen. Then I remember when that was starting to happen, you ever think there will be a day where we can make like $5,000 a day? And I'd say, yeah. And I'd start focusing on that. And then it became $10,000 and so on. I'd say, wow.
For those who don't know Matt, I mean, he is well known as $700,000 a month kind of guy. So.
Yeah, I've even done better than that. So, but I won't go any further with that because there's no point. The real key for people to get isn't how much I'm doing. It's what is your daily goal. And start setting it. And I've had people in my mastermind group, the guy in sales training teaches goals and all that, but never used the daily goal concept. And he's now writing emails to his list telling them that once he started doing the daily goal himself, his sales went up 33% above normal, or 33% better than his previous best, just from having this. And so one of the things you do when you get up in the morning, first thing is you put your feet on the floor, but you don't get up yet. You just got up to a seated position from bed. Now, the first thought you think when your feet are on the floor is critical for starting your day. And most people's thought is, well, I'm tired.
And why do I have to go to work?
Oh, yeah, gee.
Oh, poor
right?
me.
Yeah, but if you get your feet on the floor and you say to yourself, you know, I feel happy, I feel healthy, I feel terrific, like W. Clement Stone talks about, then after you do that, you say, what's my goal for today? And you start doing that every day. And then, okay, well, today I want to make X number of dollars, or today I want to write X number of words for my book, or I want to, whatever it is. You'll be surprised at how quickly this turns your life around. The first day, you can literally be stunned at what a change it makes.
Okay, Matt, stop right there for a second. And now you've told people, you know, you put them in a mental position on how to do this. What do they physically do? Besides, you know, put the feet on the floor. I mean, are they also now waiting for inspiration of how can I, you know, make more money, get more clients?
You can do that, too. That can follow that. So put your feet on the floor. You take a deep breath. You say out loud, man, I feel terrific today, or something real positive like that. And then you then ask yourself out loud, what's my goal today? And then you just sit and you wait. And the inspiration will come to you. You will get an answer. You don't sit there and go, what's my goal for today? I mean, like you're falling asleep. You say, what's my goal for today, with some enthusiasm. That way the question will be driven into your subconscious, because the key to influencing your subconscious is emotion. So if you ask your question with a lot of emotion, you'll get an answer a lot faster, and a good one. So once you get that answer, then you can visualize achieving that during the day, and then you can follow up by asking yourself, okay, this is my goal for today. How am I going to make this happen? What do I need to do to make this happen?
Very important questions.
Right. And then you can pull out a notepad and make some quick notes. First thing, you know, write the goal at the top of the notepad, and then, okay, what are my ideas to make this happen? And you write them down, and then you begin to act immediately on whatever you have there. And you just follow through with it. Same thing before bed at night. Napoleon Hill tells a story about coming up with the title of Think and Grow Rich. And he'd written 500 different titles. None of them were worth a damn. And his publisher told him that, I need a new title by tomorrow morning, or the name of your book is going to be Use Your Noodle to Get the Boodle.
I remember that.
You know?
That's a scary title, isn't it? That wouldn't sell a lot of books.
He's like, you're going to ruin me. Well, what did he do then? He then went into his room and he locked the door, and he said he had a conversation with his subconscious mind, and that he was yelling at his subconscious, telling it that he needed a $1 million title by the next morning. Now, the key element in that, again, is the emotion. He didn't just ask and go, okay, I'm looking for a $1 million title. Please, God, hand it over to me. No, he put a lot of feeling and emotion into it, demanding that he get this. And he woke up a couple hours later, after he was sleeping, with the title Think and Grow Rich in his mind and on his lips. He immediately called his publisher at 2 a.m. and told him what it was. And the publisher said, you got it.
That's a fabulous, I remember the story clearly.
Right. I mean, and if you think about this, your subconscious mind directs you toward your goals that you have already clearly defined. I want to do this today, or this, I want to accomplish this year, or whatever. It starts moving you toward the people, places, and circumstances to help that come about. But your subconscious also directs you and gives you answers, or where to get the answers, to questions. So like Dan Kennedy always talks about programming his mind before bed for his copywriting jobs. Well, same idea, but you don't program it by going, all right, I need an idea for Joe Schmo for his widget. What is it? No, you program it with a lot of enthusiasm, and then you'll wake up more often than not, or you get it in the shower, and it's amazing how it works. But that's the cybernetic function of the mind. A question you're directing to your subconscious sets up that cybernetic mechanism just the same as if you already know the answer and are visualizing that goal.
Matt, I've heard you say that your subconscious is activated by pictures and words with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to our group about that, because, you know, some people say that they actually don't know how to visualize, which is crazy, because if you look at a picture and you close your eyes and then just see the picture again, you're visualizing.
Yeah.
But they have it in their head that it's some kind of weird thing. So talk about how important the subconscious has to have those pictures.
Well, the picture you can form of someone else could you picture someone, like you said, you were meditating and then my image came to mind.
Right.
All right. Then you saw an image of the two of us talking by phone. Okay. Well, it's the same thing. Is if you have trouble visualizing yourself for whatever reason, okay, well then start with someone else. Can you visualize a famous actress or actor?
That's a great suggestion.
Right? Can you see him or her on the stage? Well, yeah, of course I can see that. Oh, okay. Well, could you see yourself sitting in a movie theater watching this person that you admire on the stage? Oh, yeah, yeah, I could do that. All right, well, let's start with that. And you got this person on the stage, and you're watching him or her, and she's bigger than life. She's like 8 or 10 feet tall, and it's funny, and you like all the mannerisms, and you're seeing everything that's happening. Now, as you're sitting there, imagine now that you could jump inside her body or his body for a moment. Okay, now what's that feel like? All right, that's an example of being able to visualize. Now, if you could visualize this person on the screen and you in the theater, well, we do have two people there. We got you in the seat and someone else on the screen. Now let's change places. Let's put you on the stage and the actor in the seat watching you. And these are ways that you can overcome that idea that you can't visualize. You can always visualize. And then the key thing is the words. When you're seeing the image, what words are you hearing in your mind? And how deep are they? And how loud are they? Are they a whisper? Or are they coming from left field or right field? Are they behind you, in front of you? When you get better and better at this, you'll notice all the different things. I would say this is one of the key things I can tell you who are listening is everybody has a success system that they follow when they succeed. They might not be conscious of it, though. And everyone has a failure system. And you go into the theater of your mind and you play around with it. All right, when I was most successful, what did I do? What did I look like? How did I feel? And you see that person, and then you then act the way that person would act in the present. And you see that person in the past, how he or she was, and then you flip a switch, say, okay, I'm going to act that way now. Let me see if I can be this way now. What would it feel like if I was making that much money today? What would it feel like if I was successful, not just in that area of my life, but in this one as well? You start doing that, then you notice everything starts to change. You immediately feel better. You have peace of mind because you have a goal, because you're focused on something, and your body vibrates at a totally different level. Now, when you start to see your results change on the outside, you then take note, okay, man, I visualized, and I pictured this, and I pictured that, and it happened. Holy moly, it happened. Okay, well, what did you do then when it happened? Let's go back in to your theater and tell me everything you did in that visualization. What did you feel like? How big were you? What were the sounds like? And so on and so forth. Okay, well, if that worked last time, let's do it again.
That's great.
Right?
You know, I think we could talk to you for about 5 hours, but our time is actually up. So here's what I would like to do. I would like everybody to go to mattfury.com and check him out and all of his wonderful products. So, Matt, I really, this has been fantastic. I'm so appreciative that, you know, I picked up on your vibration at exactly the right moment and got into get an interview with you.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I hope that this helps change the lives for the better of the people listening, and appreciate you having me on. It's been a great time.
It has. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com.